Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Did you know that just 26.4% of college presidents are women? Fortunately, you're about to meet one of them, Dr. Vinita Chenault of Haskell University. That's Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. It happens to be one of the premier tribal universities in the United States, offering quality education to Native American and Alaska Native students, all of whom are members of federally recognized tribes. In fact, alumni represent more than 140 tribes nationwide. Founded in 1884 as a residential boarding school for American Indian children, Haskell offers both associate and baccalaureate degrees. Dr. Chenault, a member of the Prairie Band Potawatomi and Kickapoo tribes, began her educational career at Haskell Indian Junior College. She transferred to the University of Kansas, which is also in Lawrence, earning both bachelor and master's degrees in social welfare. She joined the Haskell faculty in 1991 and was charged with creating the Haskell Social Work Program. In 2005, she completed her doctorate and was named Haskell's Vice President of Academic Affairs. The recipient of numerous awards and honors, including her selection as an American Indian College Fund Mellon Fellow, Dr. Chenault became president of the university in 2014, the first Haskell student named to that position. She follows in the footsteps of many generations of her family, and her oldest sons and daughter are also Haskell alumni. Dr. Chenault, a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to spend some time with you.
So, college president, did you ever envision that possibility growing up?
Not at all. I came from very humble beginnings, and the fact that I'm in this role currently and what's occurred over my lifetime is pretty amazing for me.
So, did you grow up in Kansas?
Yes, I did. I grew up in Topeka, Kansas, which is about 20 miles here from Lawrence. I have family that continue to reside on both the Prairie Band Potawatomi Reservation as well as the Kickapoo Reservation in northern Kansas, just outside of Horton.
So was that a very small environment? How many were you growing up? How many people were in your tribe on the reservation?
We currently have about 8,000 individuals that are enrolled in our tribe, but they're spread throughout the United States. The Kickapoo tribe is a little bit smaller, but I grew up in Topeka, so that, you know, it's the capital of Kansas. It's obviously not a huge city, but, you know, there was a solid experience there.
Now, was it always a given that you were going to go to a Native American university?
Not at all. We grew up, as I shared, in a very humble background. I'm one of six children, and we were very low income throughout my lifetime and, you know, faced many of the struggles that our students face here at Haskell today. You know, at that point in time, the idea of moving much beyond that was pretty extraordinary. But it's, you know, I really credit the accomplishments within our family to my mother, who, you know, despite economic challenges, she always worked to try to get us to the best school that she could possibly get us to. So that made a difference. And I think, you know, she always encouraged us to pursue education because she recognized the value of education in overcoming adverse circumstances. And she was absolutely right with that perspective. And I think that, you know, today we recognize at Haskell that the difference maker for the students that we work with, you know, and even today in 2015, it's pretty amazing that we still see a large number, probably 70% of our students that are first generation college students. And that is amazing in and of itself. And education is the opportunity that opens doors and allows our students to become change makers in their communities and the organizations that exist among tribal people, and, you know, creates the opportunity that they need to have in order to demonstrate what they're fully capable of.
What was that like for you to leave the comfort of your home, even though it was within the same state?
When I first came to Haskell, I followed my sisters and brother, who were also attending Haskell. You know, when I was in high school, nobody ever, you know, talked to me about, you know, are you planning to go to college? And, you know, it really wasn't even on my radar, you know, within the school system. You know, like I said, our mother always encouraged us to pursue education. And so when they all opted to enroll at Haskell in the footsteps of my brother, then, you know, it became more real for me. So it was, I suppose, in some ways different, but, you know, at that point in time, it was also exciting to, you know, continue with education.
Did you always have a bent for doing something in the social sciences field?
The thing that brought social work into my mind is when I was in adolescence as a teenager, I recall going with my mother to the public welfare agency as she was applying for assistance. And I can recall this caseworker treating my mother very rudely. She talked down to her. She
was dismissive.
And, you know, as I sat there observing, you know, this woman who I knew as a very strong and independent woman who was fierce in protecting us and trying to create opportunities for us to be talked to in that way. You know, at that point in time, I remember thinking, someday I'm going to be sitting behind that desk and I will never treat people the way I saw this woman treat my mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that really was the impetus for my decision to pursue social work. I saw many strong traditional women in our community over the course of my lifetime and heard many stories about these strong Indian women that fought for the rights of our tribes when termination was occurring, that stood up and created political change within our community when there were practices being engaged in that weren't in the best interests of our nations. You know, in many of our conversations over the course of my lifetime, as we'd be sitting around the dinner table, were about whatever the politics of the day were, whether those were mainstream or tribal politics. You know, I grew up believing that we have a responsibility to be engaged in work towards justice and social change, and being told that education is something that they can't take away from you.
You know, when we have a conversation about race relations, we hear that the treatment of African Americans, often referred to as America's original sin. What about the treatment of Native Americans?
I think that that whole experience is in many ways invisible to a lot of individuals. They don't think about the millions and millions of lands and resources that were ceded by tribes and the really horrific conditions that, you know, were experienced by tribal people upon contact. You know, you had very different cultures really colliding and differing worldviews and philosophies about life that didn't match up. And, you know, the fact that 90% of Indigenous people were gone within a decade of contact because of the lack of resiliency for the type of diseases that were encountered in that contact. And then the ongoing practices of the federal and state governments in really wiping out tribal people over the course of the history, something that you don't see in textbooks at all. You know, I can remember when I was in fourth grade, I remember coming, you know, looking at our textbooks and they talked about tribal people as bloodthirsty savages, scalping people. And, you know, and it's like, I can remember as a kid thinking, that doesn't reflect who I come from. Those aren't the tribal people that I know. Even today, we still have to deal with these kinds of issues, not only within curriculum in schools and practices within schools, but, you know, in the larger society, the use of mascots and such.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Vanita Chennault, who happens to be the president of Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. Dr. Chennault, talk to us about the campus. Talk to us about Haskell, its history and where you are today, and the student body. A lot of questions I'm throwing at you.
Haskell is an amazing place. It's established in 1884 as a part of the federal policies of assimilation and civilization. And those beginnings were very harsh beginnings for students that were taken from their families and communities and brought to Haskell. Or, you know, actually, at the time it was established, it was the U.S. Industrial Training School. The intent of this institution was to separate children from their families and their communities, and oftentimes kids were brought to Haskell from great distances. And, you know, again, as part of that general philosophy of kill the Indian and save the man, really colored the approaches that were used with these kids that were separated from their families. And I think that most folks don't understand that history as well. The fact that, you know, tribal people have had this long history of having their children taken from them and not allowed to have contact with those kids as they were raised in schools that were set up using a model that was based on, you know, a military model. Kids were marched. They wore uniforms. When they arrived on campus, typically they had everything about them that was tribal stripped. Their hair was cut. The regalia or the clothing that they came in was destroyed. And to have that kind of beginning for this university and to see the amazing reversal of that kind of oppression that was, you know, it was normal. It was the practice of the day. And, you know, today you have a university on that same land and a commitment of our faculty and staff and a mission that talks about the unique role of Haskell in building leadership capacity for tribes with a commitment to, you know, the sovereignty of our nations, with a commitment to the rights of self-determination for tribes.
You tackle that in your book, Weaving Strength, Weaving Power, Violence and Abuse Against Indigenous Women, which is even more of a double whammy.
Right.
Native American men, but boy, women, and that must be a hell of a combo, being Native American and being a woman.
Right. In our communities today, we see, and we've been seeing this phenomenon since the 1970s, anecdotally, at that point in time, some communities were reporting these outrageous rates of violence in the community. And when I began looking at this, my first question was who we are as Indigenous people. In our creation stories, in our origin stories, women are celebrated and respected for the unique contributions that they bring into this world. And within our traditional ways and those stories, they talk about the value of women and the important role that they serve in our tribes and communities. Traditionally, our women have had a much greater voice in decision-making, including decisions related to treaty-making, decisions that would impact the future of the nations, whether that, you know, was going to war. You know, many roles we've historically and traditionally had within our communities. And so when you think about those origin stories, you hear these great teachings about the respect that should be shown to women and how it is that we're treated, as well as how it is that we conduct ourselves. And so my first question when I started looking at this issue of violence against Indigenous women was, how did we get to this point? And you really have to take a look, I believe, at the extended history and the disruption that occurred across the systems that operated within our tribal communities, including gender systems. When you look back at those records of contact, and, you know, when I mentioned earlier the collision between cultures, certainly those that were coming from Europe, the role of women at that point in time and the way they were treated was very different than what they experienced here. And, you know, in many ways, there was no way for them to even process that information. Women were considered property. You could do what you would with them on those continents from which those early explorers came from. And, you know, they came to a land where women had voice and value. So as you walk through the history, you see steps being taken to eliminate governments in which women had voice. You see decisions being made that excluded women from positions of power and influence that they'd had, and trying to mold us, and that's kind of been our ongoing experience, is being molded into something we weren't in order to be accepted.
Right. And in your lifetime, that's obviously been a goal and a mission of yours to continue to turn that around.
Right. You know, who we are, we have unique experiences, knowledge, philosophies, worldviews, values, ways that really are a part of the solution. So as we talk about violence against Indigenous women, I think we have to ask ourselves, how did it get this way, before we can understand what needs to be done? And so that book, you know, not only documents the prevalence of violence against Indigenous women, but also begins discussing strategies for talking honestly about the truth and the process of healing that needs to begin within our communities. It's not good enough for me for us to simply say, well, you know, we're like this because of what's occurred over history. That shouldn't be an excuse. I think that we have to understand that history, but then we have to stand up, dust ourselves off, and move forward with identifying, so then what are we going to do about it? Because I don't want to hear people saying, I'm like this because of,
right.
You know, we've got to be focused on solutions, and we've got to identify the work, and we've got to identify the solutions, and not simply to have somebody place over us a template that, you know, works for a middle class mainstream population, but our own unique strategies for healing that incorporate who we are as tribal people.
Is that the mission and the focus of Haskell?
Well, the mission and focus of Haskell is to build the capacity within our communities at multiple levels. We have some tribes that are struggling deeply and just have astounding levels of whether it's suicide, poverty, unemployment. We have to be engaged in creating solutions, and we have to be willing to roll up our sleeves and to find strategies to correct and address those issues. So we provide that leadership capacity. You have to have students that understand the intersections of, you know, all of these policies and rules and regulations that impact tribes today, and who are really passionate about doing that work if we're going to turn around our communities. And we also have communities that are very successful, and they're, you know, desperately looking for passionate young people that are willing to make a commitment to continuing that work of change. We need talented, educated, grounded young people and older people to work collaboratively to create a better future.
What's life like on the Haskell campus? And is your population from dozens and dozens of states?
Oh, yes. And I think that that's one of the unique things about what's called the Haskell experience. Not only are you going to go away to college and, you know, you're going to attend this university, but you're also going to have the opportunity to be a part of the lives of students that represent this incredible diversity throughout Indian country. And that experience in and of itself is very different than any other experience you're going to find in a university setting. Haskell was established in partial fulfillment of treaty and trust obligation in carrying out that responsibility for the federal government. The university is open to any member of any federally recognized tribe in the United States. And so our population is 100% indigenous.
How many students attend Haskell?
Typically about 850 to 900 students. You can have students that come from very remote villages in Alaska.
Wow.
To students that were raised in New York and have very limited contact with their tribe.
You have New Yorkers on your campus?
This semester, I believe that we've got students from New York on campus. And, you know, through not only the classes, but events that are hosted on campus, the student governance system, these students get to understand what it's like and what we share in common, perhaps most importantly, amongst all of these culturally, linguistically diverse tribes from throughout the nation.
Again, if you're just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Vinita Chenault, who is the president of Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. So what's your goal? What are you doing, Dr. Chenault? What's life like for you?
It's pretty busy. Over the past 2 years, we've made some extraordinary accomplishments, and we're really looking into the future to identify the steps that we need to take to ensure that Haskell is not only improving the quality of the education and services that we provide for tribes, but to ensure that we're really connected with tribes from throughout the United States to determine what are your educational priorities for your membership and how can we help in that equation?
Do you recruit students?
We're in the process of implementing new strategies for recruitment and having that presence. We're also in the process of preparing a survey of tribal leaders to identify the next degree programs that Haskell should consider as we expand those offerings.
What tends to be the most common major?
Currently, the top two degree programs that we offer are the degree in business administration and the degree in Indigenous and American Indian Studies. We also have a elementary teacher ed baccalaureate and a degree, a baccalaureate in environmental science. So we've got, you know, we've got a few strong degree programs, but we're looking at what are the other needs of tribes.
And talk to me personally about you. Where are you today in your own head, in your own space, in your life?
I'm excited about, you know, not only what we've accomplished. I think the thing that I'm, you know, just really proud of is the reversal and the healing that I think that Haskell is engaged in, you know, as we've, you know, traveled this 130-year history. If Haskell can turn around its approaches as it's demonstrated it can, to me, that's a strong indication of our ability to create change within our communities. So I think we've turned things around, and to me that's the most rewarding thing. Haskell will never be a place again where children are brought and stripped of their identity and taught to be ashamed of what it means to be tribal. Haskell will never be a place again where the traditional knowledge and the cultures of tribal people will be stripped from students. Instead, we're doing just the opposite. I want to celebrate who we are as tribal people, the fact that, you know, despite the history, we're still here. We were supposed to be extinct in the 1800s, and that didn't occur. You know, we still have that traditional knowledge, those traditional worldviews, beliefs that are still alive and well in Indian country. And I think, you know, the role of Haskell in supporting tribes is very different than it was 130 years ago. So I'm looking into the future and thinking about the steps that we can take to ensure that in another 130 years, another 150 years, there will still be a Haskell for tribal students nationally. And, you know, really looking at how do we begin establishing a national system of Indigenous education using or linking all of the tribal colleges as a part of that equation.
As you all work together, because you're basically on the same side.
Exactly, exactly.
I want to just refer back to one of my statistics in my intro and kind of wrap it up this way. Did you know that you were part of this 26.4%? Does that shock you?
Not really. I think if you looked solely at tribal leadership in the tribal colleges, you'd see a much higher level. And I don't have that at my fingertips.
Of females, of women.
Of females.
Yeah, women. Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think when you look at a society nationally that still hasn't come to grips with the importance and the contributions of women in leadership roles, it's not surprising from that perspective.
Yeah, you know, at some point, wouldn't it be just great that we just don't have to reference this in a conversation? I hope that happens in my lifetime, although I don't know that I can take that to the bank. But
well, I think that that's our challenge as women. I think that, you know, in many ways, the mistake that we've made is that we've assumed that the work that's been done over the past 40 years would hold. And, you know, the fact that we see so much of the progress that's been made to advance the role of women in our nation is being tinkered with and gutted in some ways. I think it's time for us to stand back up in a different way and to challenge the notion that, you know, we don't have a place in this society. I think that that creates imbalance and, you know, it's not healthy for a nation. In my book, I talk about these philosophies about women. And there's a Cheyenne proverb that talks about the role of women, and a nation is not defeated until the hearts of its women are on the ground.
Wow.
Women are strong, incredibly.
You're damn straight. And you know what?
Right.
On that note, our time has run out. You are inspirational. And boy, has it been my pleasure to get to know you and to have a conversation with you, Dr. Chenault. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. That is.